Welcome to Faith Walking Conversations. In this episode, Marcos León and a group of faith walkers share a time of meditation and learning about practices that can nurture your soul. This week, they focus on the topic Soul Identity, Final Considerations. This conversation was originally recorded in October of 2020. We want to remind you that Faith Walking's mission is to make wholeness possible for individuals, communities, and the world. Visit us at www.faithwalking.us. Join this conversation. Until I see the Christ in you, I'm gonna look twice at you. Welcome to our conversations of Mondays. Exploring practices that are helpful for our souls, right? What is going on with your soul? That's a question that we often ask, and we try to explore things that are helpful in that conversation. So we are in our last conversation on this series of soul identity, you know, and I have to admit how exciting has been just to walk through it, in some ways remember some things that we knew already, and in other ways kind of receive a new perspective of it. So I look forward to hear from you too. I have a kind of a short reflections. I have titled this session Practical or Final Considerations around soul identity. We have explored things more in depth, and I'm sure you have had also your own experience of this sort of sitting in your soul, you know, during these past 5 or 6 weeks. So let me go ahead and share some of my thoughts, and then really open the dialogue and see what's going on with you. How is this working sort of for you? So we have talked about identity, we have talked about the need to find our identity in God, to explore our own identity, you know, to know ourselves. Also this awareness, and there's a big connection in this idea of awareness with faith walking and the work that we do. And we talk about sin, we have talked about redemption, true self, false self. So David Benner has been sort of a guide for us in this walk, and I believe this journey of identity requires sort of scouts or guides, people who are able to articulate this idea of identity. If I take a little bit of a comparison with psychology, you know, is an experience that makes or is used to create our identity, and that experience is out of also kind of observing other people. We need a scout too. We see one person, we try one thing. And in our spiritual journey, things are not exactly the same, but we need scouts and we need experience. That is the analogy into this, right? So David Venner has been one of those scouts for us in his book, The Gift of Being Yourself. This kind of summarizes a little bit of the premises of this exploration of soul identity in our journey. So he writes, a complete knowing of ourself in relation to God includes knowing of three things. First, knowing of ourself as deeply loved beings by God. Second, knowing ourselves as deeply sinful. That's the other side of it. And knowing of ourselves as in process of being redeemed and restored. Facing these deep truths about ourselves makes it possible for us to accept and know ourselves as we are accepted and known by God. You know? So he summarizes this. I like, and this is a very good point, you know, knowing our identity, ourselves in relation to God. That is kind of the special aspect of our exploring. We're not just trying to do self-therapy, right? Or try to just get to the philosophy of my identity of human beings, but use the idea that this knowing is in relation to God's knowing of ourselves. And we need to know ourselves in this paradox of deeply loved and deeply sinner, right? And we need to also understand that this is not a static place, but is a dynamic. We are in process of redemption. So I like that. That's a good beginning, you know, reminding us what is this about. So first thing, practical, final consideration, the paradox. You know, the paradox is very practical. And there is a paradox in you and in me. False self, true self, deeply loved, deeply sinner. And what is practical of this for me is that I have to admit that I'm not very good in dealing with paradoxes. I don't know if you are good. I hope you are. But it takes me an extra effort, extra perspective. It's like really, I'm not good, you know. Paradoxes are things that I cannot control. And because I cannot control them, I feel anxious. We talk a lot about anxiety in faith walking, and we have explored a lot about anxiety. And one thing that we know about anxiety is that when we are anxious, we tend to polarize, to take sides. Oh my gosh, I'm just sinned. I'm deeply sinner. This is me. And we're going to this road of shame, you know, and we don't believe, we can't believe these words of Jesus saying, I am in you, or the things that I do, you can do. You know, we polarize into this kind of broken side of us, and we cannot get out of it. Or we polarize into the other side, you know, deeply loved, and that's all only about love. And we forget that there are actions that have consequences that are not healthy. I always say this, the love of God is never at stake. And there are consequences for our acts, right? There are things that we need to change. The call of transformation is there. So we polarize or make things relative, right? Oh, you know, that's not pretty sure. We don't have scouts. We don't have guides, and we don't know how to do it. And we just wash down a little bit the impact of this, right? And that is the impact of anxiety. So we can move from shame to denial. And we are ashamed of our false self. We're ashamed of our true self, or vice versa, of our false self, right? So that is
Marcus.
Yes.
Can you explain what relativize means?
Yes, of course. To make a relative, relativize is making less important, making kind of universal. You know, it really doesn't matter to understand the deeply loving nature that we have, or the deeply sinner. You know, this is not very important. This is relative. It's not very important. That's what I mean. It's a great question, Brenda. Hope it clarifies. We just kind of lower the standards, right? We make it, it's not super important. Yeah, so what to do with paradoxes? I will invite you to first remember that Christ is the one who is holding all paradoxes. You know, I love the picture of some author talks about Jesus on the cross with his hands extended, you know, and bringing all things together, heaven and earth, grace and sin, life and death, fully human, fully divine. So you see, Christ holds paradoxes. So you are not alone. You can rest in that Christ has been there. Actually, Christ is there in this paradox. And the first thing that we learn to do is to embrace them, you know. And for many of us, this embracing takes place out of some level of crisis that we cannot fix, we cannot explain. But hold the tension. We use that phrase in faith walking too. Don't try to resolve the tension. hold it. Stay there. I put this, I mentioned this parable that Jesus uses about the kingdom of God. Like he says, the kingdom of God is like that field with wheat and weed. And, you know, both things are growing at the same time. And somehow God knows that. And I can stay there. I don't need to jump into one side or another. I just need to expose these things. Okay, this is the first practical consideration. See yourself in the middle of the tension that is caused by this paradox. Don't try to solve it. Embrace it. Present it to God. Present yourself in the fullness of your paradox, true self, false self, to God. Okay? I don't know how that is very practical, but believe me, as you experience that, I believe it's helpful. The second practical thing, there are only three things that I want to share, is about the path. The path. Okay, so how in the world we do this, Marcos? I mean, yes, okay, get the point. Well, I'm going to put my best way to put this 1, 2, 3 little thing, right? First is about exposure. This is about exposing the reality of being deeply loved to God, to yourself. Even talking about it, I believe I'm deeply loved. I changed my inner dialogue at some point in my spiritual journey. I never imagined how God would speak to me, maybe Marcos, right? But it was very static. And at some point, the inner dialogue for me changed, and I started kind of receiving this voice of God, like saying, "Marcos, my son, I am proud of you." And I cannot tell you what that did to my soul. When I start listening inside of me, exposing the belovedness of my reality. Now, that is not the only thing to expose. The other thing to expose is your false self. You know, I cannot medicate, I cannot relativize, I cannot deny, hide, go around the reality of my own brokenness. I need to have that conversation with God. And it's very helpful to hear sometimes God in my own little world saying, "Marcos, my beloved son, I love you and I'm proud of you. I see how much you are trying." And we need to talk about this. That's not working. We need to change that. You know, so there is this space for those. First thing is exposure. The second thing is detachment. You know, when we talk about the psychology, I can tell you a lot of things about detachment, how that's a process. It involves all of our being. But detachment in this sense is about kind of, you know, detach from the attachment to be the person that you think you need to be. Detach from, you know, I really need to be this good or this bad. I mean, have you ever let go and let, you know, I believe that sickness and suffering, probably death, I have never experienced death on my own, but I've seen the detachment at some point takes place in people who are dying. You know, you just let go. You let go of looking good. You let go of, you know, things that you're trying to hold on. Detachment from your false self. Detachment of the self that you think that you need to be. This is a process. It's a helpful word. Detachment. Let go. And finally, I will say the path is a path of devotion and contemplation. I'm using here a lot of work that has been very seminal for me, that is Thomas Merton's writings. Devotion is I will be faithful. That's my very simple way to define devotion. Devotion is I will be faithful. I will keep walking, even if I have to crawl sometimes. I will move forward, Lord. That is the essence of my identity. I am yours. If that is not truth, it's over. There's no me, right? And then contemplation. And contemplation is a tricky thing to try to define. So please, excuse my limitations. I'm not going to pretend to try to define contemplation, okay? I'm going to first give you some words. Actually, this is Thomas Merton, okay? And then I will try to tell you my own version of it. That is not even just mine, but taken from other people. But Thomas Merton writes, contemplation is the highest expression of man's intellectual and spiritual life. So there is a mix, spirit and intellect. Is spiritual wonder, wondering. It is a spontaneous awe at the sacredness of life. It is gratitude for life, for awareness and for being. It is a vivid realization of the fact that life and being in us proceed from an invisible, transcendent, and infinitely abundant source, capital S, source, God. See, it's very poetic, and it kind of says something that sort of my heart, my soul catches, but my mind can't control. That is kind of the language of these scouts in many ways. It's a spiritual wonder. It's gratitude for life. It's awe for the sacredness of life. I see that. I see that in trees, in the fall, in the sky, in my kids. There's something that transcends my own understanding. There is an echo that is awakened into that. Contemplation. You know, the word contemplation comes of seeing, observing in detail and steadily. You know, you contemplate. You look at something for a long time. You pay a lot of attention. So that is a helpful idea of what these people mean about contemplation. I'm going to just give you my understanding. Contemplation is the level of experience. It's an experience where our self comes face to face with the love and mercy of God and witnesses the reconciling power of Christ. This is not purely me. I'm taking from a couple of people that this is kind of my cup of tea in the sense that I'm a student of these kind of things. But you see, it's a level of experience. It is not just an idea or a concept. It's an experience that I experience when I walk, take a walk in a fall day like today, with the sun is shining with a different light that was summer. I cannot explain, but I recognize something is changing. But I recognize also that somebody is holding this change. You see, the experience starts there. And I see the sacredness of life, the green of the trees, or the leaves falling still, or the brilliance of the sun. And somehow that makes my soul be face to face with something that is love and is mercy and is God. It's beautiful. And in the midst of that, there's a sense in me that all of this is being held together by Christ, reconciled. I can say, yes, this is God, because Jesus Christ allows me to say, yes, it is God. You see, it is the testimony of the Spirit of God through Jesus Christ in my heart that says, yes, I know that I know that I know. Okay, there you go. That's my little parenthesis and contemplation, okay? But remember, practical considerations of this spiritual journey. The path is about exposing myself. The love of God is not at stake. I need to expose the love, the belovedness and the sin in my life. It's about detachment and it's about keep walking with these steps of devotion and contemplation, okay? Finally, let me talk about the struggle. This is practical. It will be awesome to tell you that this soul identity process is not, it doesn't involve any struggle, but I believe it involves struggle. Thomas Merton once again says, the full maturity of the spiritual life cannot be reached unless we first pass through the dread, anguish, trouble, and fear that necessarily accompany the inner crisis of the spiritual death, in which we finally abandon our attachment to our exterior self and surrender completely to Christ. Yeah. Thomas Merton was pretty in-your-face kind of a guy. You know, when you read him, he's pretty strong in things like that. He talks about a death that needs to happen. And we know that. We see in Christ the echo of his word saying, you know, unless the seed and the doesn't fall to the ground and dies. There's something about whoever loses his life for me will find it. So that's the echo of this. And there's a struggle. Nobody likes dying. Nobody that I know that likes dying. Jesus didn't like dying. Okay? So I'm not talking of this romantic thing. And death is not only death, physical death. We have many deaths that we face in our lives. The death of love. The death of loss. Even in this hard season of pandemic, and we are dying in a way to the illusion or to the view or to the experience of a different time. So those deaths are part of this. And in those deaths, there is this emerging reality. It's a perfect context, a perfect storm in which the true self emerges. That's what Thomas Merton talks about. And the only thing that we have is the choice to face this in this way. This is about my true self. Or to ignore it and hold on in the past and keep living for many years saying, no. It's going to be great tomorrow. But you know, it's that greatness that it tells you it's going to be okay, but there's no essence in that it's going to be okay. You know, more medication. You know what I mean, medication. We just numb that death so it doesn't look like very death. You know, more Netflix. And I love Netflix, by the way, so don't take it as a judgment to Netflix. More Netflix, more whatever, more whatever makes us feel alive. And that's the essence of the false self, is a false life. That's not going to be sustained. Unless I find my true identity in God, I'm not going to make it. Okay? I'm just going to read this, if you allow me. All the way down. Thomas Merton, once again, he, you know, in this identity, you become a poet. All the way down. I went down into the cavern, all the way down to the bottom of the sea. I went down lower than Jonah and the whale. No one ever got so far down as me. I went down lower than any diamond mine, deeper than the lowest hole in Kimberley. All the way down, I thought I was the devil. He was not deeper down than me. And when they thought that I was gone forever, that I was all the way in hell, I got right back into my body and came back out and rang my bell. No matter how they tried to harm me now, no matter where they lay me in the grave, no matter what injustices they do, I've seen the root of all that belief. I've seen the room where life and death are made. And I have known the secret forge of war. I even saw the womb that all things come from, for I got down so far. But when they thought that I was gone forever, that I was all the way in hell, I got right back into my body and came back out and rang my bell. Poetry. And I tried to bring you this, but this is a reflection of Merton, Thomas Merton, experience of spiritual death, you know, the false self dying. And you know, the thing is, he talks, you get the language down deeper than Jonah and the whale. I thought I was the devil. You know, so there is this exposure of the root of my identity. And when sometimes what I find there is darkness, right? But he says, but when I thought that I was gone, I came back out and rang my bell. And this is a you know, ringing a bell. He was a, Mertong was a monk, right? And a Trappist monk. So when you are a monk, you are in monastery, they are working, right? Working. And they have the hours and the office, but there is a bell that is rung every time that they come out of the work to worship. So that is the little image that he uses, right? In the midst of all this death, there was some calling that called me back to God, and I found myself again. So, whoever likes poetry, thank you for allowing me to offer that. That is the picture of this journey. It's ambiguous. It's personal, but it communicates something that I think is powerful for all of us. James Finley, he was a Thomas Merton student. He writes, Merton leads us along the journey to God, in which the self that begins the journey is not the self that arrives. The self that begins is the self that we taught ourselves to be. It is this self that dies along the way until in the end no one is left. This no one is our true self. It is the self that stands prior to all that is this or that. It is the self in God, the self bigger than death, yet born of death. It is the self that the Father forever loves. You might think this is too much, Marcus. This is too crazy to see it. But this language about this idea of identity. And there is, again, the echo of a Christ saying, kind of, I don't do anything but what my Father tells me to do. I don't say anything but what my Father... You know, there is this essence of the uniqueness, the identity that Jesus knew that he was, and sort of the identity in God, right? And that's what these people are talking about. So the practicality of this for me is that in the midst of the paradox and the path and the struggle, we are not alone. It is a process. It is not about perfection. It is about progress and in some level, transformation that happens and takes place deep in the sense of my being. God grows in me to a point in which I am me, but God is in me. Yeah. I'll stop right there, okay? And really, I have given you a lot of a bit of an extra, you know, notch up into into contemplation and stuff like that, that I believe, you know, is exploration of identity. So what gets a stir in you as you listen to all of these things?
Well, I was thinking, as I was listening to that poem, thinking back, not just in this COVID, but just times and periods in my life where I was at such autumn pit, especially after my mother had committed suicide. I was a whole year, at least a year, I'd left ministry, I left everything, turned my back on God. And everybody at that time in my life, I remember they just, that's it, you know, she's a goner, you know, she's living like the devil. And I was during that time. And I didn't even think I would get out of that. But I remember one night, sitting in the dark outside by myself, and just I finally cried out to God. I said, what do you want from me? What am I supposed to do? And I had to go through a horrible period of time and grieve in a way that I didn't want to. Nobody wants to. And my life turned around. And actually, it is such a testimony to my own children now. I mean, I'm not perfect by any means. I went into back into ministry back in 2005 and actually became ordained and as a minister. But all that I went through during that time helped me to be able to be compassionate with those. I worked at the domestic abuse shelters and actually with drug addiction too. And it, you know, when COVID hit and that bottom started falling out again, I got scared. I mean, the first 4 months were hard because I had completely detached. I was sharing with Judith earlier that, you know, some people, you know, when they go through the depression or they start hitting that bottom, there's medication for anxiety. Some people self-medicate with food. Like you said, Netflix, you know, you zone out. Mine was wine. You know, it was just, okay. I told her, I said, I'm looking at the clock. Oh, is it 1:30? You know, anything to not feel what we were going through. So, but then, you know, that getting back up and ringing that bell. I love that. I love that part. Because that's what it just hit me so hard. And actually I'm going to share that with my son right now. He's going through a difficult time and, I think it's going to really help him see, you know.
Thank you, Brenda. Thank you for your honest sharing and the beauty of receiving that authenticity and vulnerability.
I don't think I shared it in this group. I may have shared it with Saul, but with a book that I've been reading, the author in one chapter is talking about how the dark times of our soul, the times that we really struggle. And he related it to winter and the fact that trees are putting down their strongest roots in the winter when we can't see it. But that's when the work is being done so that they can spring out in springtime. And that image for me has been incredibly helpful during these dark days of COVID and days of depression and anxiety, to know that what's happening in me is growth that's going to be there for when spring comes again.
What was the name of that, Judith?
It's a book that I was reading by Nathan Foster.
Okay.
Thank you, Judith. That's beautiful.
Welcome.
Yeah. So,
the thing that struck me today was living in the tension, you know, of that place as we're on a journey and we're dying to the false self and living into who we truly are, and it's you know, it's joy and it's pain, and you know, Laura and I talked a little about Paul in Philippians, where he says, "I've learned to be content in whatever circumstances," and find the Lord in that place. And and then I, you know, reminded of Romans 7, where Paul talks about the very thing that I don't want to do, that's what I do, you know, and who will free me for this? And then, of course, in Romans 8, he moves into thanks be to God. You know, so just living in that place and being willing to walk in that place. And how we opened today was helpful to me with all of that, because it's like, no matter how dark things can be, there's the promise of the morning. And I shared with Laura, I just had this vision of the contrast between the darkest night and then the, you know, the dawn with like the tremendous brightness, and but that's the promise that we have. And you know, it's both to degrees we experience that in our journey now, but then there's the, you know, the ultimate future promise, when, you know, every tear shall be wiped away. And and to live, you know, to live with that hope. I think hope is so important. And faith, hope, and love, as 1 Corinthians 13 says, grounds us in that truth. And so, you know, and I was also struck by the verse that we looked at first today that the night can be long. I mean, we pray, Lord, may it not be, but the night can be long. You know, he said through the night, weeping through the night, but joy comes in the morning. So that just speaks to patience and perseverance, even in that place.
Yeah, so thank you.
I love what you said, Saul, about that patience and perseverance. I was just recently talking about this on a podcast that I did. The waiting and the waiting, you know, is like you're waiting in the water, you know, waiting for rescue. Mm-hmm. And then you wonder when that rescue is ever going to happen. And it seems like nothing's going to change. Nothing's ever going to happen, you know. And I think that's been the hardest part because we all want this COVID thing over with. We just want to move on with our lives. But I'm starting to realize as each day goes by, thankfully because of faith walking and a lot of prayer, that like you said, it's just that patience and perseverance. We don't know what God's doing during this time. We don't know. I mean, I know some people are saying, oh, this is going to be done at the end of the year. I'm with Ken. No, it's not. But, you know, when you said about being content in whatever situation, I think we all want to be that. I know I do. I want to be content. So I keep asking God, how can I just be content in this? And instead of asking him that now, what I've been saying is, what do you want to show me during this? And he's showing me things that I never would have seen before or understood before. It doesn't mean that I'm waiting patiently perfectly. So I'm still having to just learn that, but I'm things come around in a way. Like I see my grandchild for the first time, telling Judith, I waited all these months, you know, not being able to hold her, and boom, my son just shows up and surprises me. And just little things like that. I'm becoming more aware of God's presence in the little things now and appreciating those things because of the COVID.
That's great, Brenda. Thank you, Brenda. Such a beautiful reflection of love you're saying, and becoming more present of God. You know, I think all of you have mentioned the reality of the night that we are living, night and darkness, waiting, you know, and the passage even that we used to start, and there's another psalm that says David. It says I forget the word, like the guardian, like the guy who is checking that nobody is coming to attack us. That is a harder and longer night, right? Because you have to be awake, and you have to be awake just actually looking in the darkness. So you say, so it is pray. The picture is. It's not short, and it's not. Yet, then you have the testimony of you know, what that night in the hands of God does in my soul. You know, you read the night of the soul. You know, John of the cross. And the love that comes out, the poetry. Okay, he's not trying to teach anything. He's just expressing such a love for God. Or you read in Hosea, you know, I will cut off your roads and your ways to all your lovers, you know, Israel. I will make you go into the wilderness, and you will long for the things that you won't be able to have, these false things, false self, right? And in the wilderness, you will not call me my Lord, but you will call me my husband. So you see, there's a true identity that emerges out of it. And I'm not trying to romanticize suffering, right? But I'm trying to say that suffering can be the context. That's very practical. Can be the context to the real exposure of my identity. You know, what is really my identity? What is really the essence of my soul? And COVID is darkness. in a way, many, many, many ways. But we can't change it. Now, many of us are experiencing this painful grounding. I don't know if I call it like that for you, but I can call it like that for me. It's a painful grounding, recentering, kind of tearing apart some layers, and there's pain, and there's suffering, and there's tension. So for sure. And I want to fix it. You know, I want to be content, like Paul says. And I think that God has to do something to make me content for the rest of COVID. And the truth is, it doesn't work that way, right? It's not that I get the little magic powder of contentment. No, but I have a moment of exposure of my contentment, this moment, this reality, this morning, seeing my grandson for the first time, walking to this path this morning, this afternoon. That reality exposes gratitude, touches contentment. Contentment is real. It's the truest thing that you can tell about yourself in that moment. But it's just a moment. It doesn't guarantee you that the next 30 minutes you're going to get into discontentment. And again, you're going to be like, oh my God, why is it? Expose both things to God. And find that you are loved in both. And you might discover that the only reality is love. Because contentment and discontentment are passing, like this moment is gone, and this moment is gone, and this moment is gone. You see? They pass, but something stays. This is love. I'm being held by God. I think that is my version of these things. It doesn't mean that I'm automatically happy or automatically over. That is kind of polarizing. You know, okay, I want to be fixed right now. Little by little, I learned that the identity is deeper than the moment. It's not external, it's internal. That no one that James Finley talks, there's God in me and through me and around me. Yeah. And we can practice that. Good. I wish it would be a happier topic, right? That we can say, hey, this is about, again, comes to mind Ecclesiastes, you know, talking about better, it says, better is the house of mourning than the house of feasting. Because in the house of mourning, there is something deeper happening in us, like the winter, Judith, in the book that you're reading. Something is going on in us. And yes, there's a hope of tomorrow, a hope of fullness. We can wait, but I can also hope that not only then, but maybe later today, I can find a moment of rest. Maybe if I am silent for 5 minutes, I can just come back to the place that we share. But my hope is as real. It's a real thing in me. Commitment for that moment is part of that path of contemplation and devotion. Thank you. I think this is, guys, I think this is essential for us in times like the ones that we are living, COVID. If we don't find that grounded, that center, we will always be depending on the tone of the whatever news or conversations that are around us. And you don't see that in Jesus, right? Jesus was not depending on that. There was some, this strength, and that's identity. And glad that we can sort of explore those things together. Thank you very much, friends. So let me read, as time comes, our blessing. It's a blessing that we remember and we hold deep in us. May the Lord bless you and keep you. May the Lord make his face to shine upon you and be gracious to you. May the Lord lift up his countenance upon you and give you peace. For more information about Faith Walking, visit www.faithwalking.us. We want to remind you that Faith Walking exists because of your financial support. Please consider giving at faithwalking.us/donate. Thank you for listening.
Until I see the Christ in you, till I'm looking through the eyes of love, till I'm looking through the eyes.